Support made possible by Strategic Farm Marketing. Strategic's annual series of crop insurance and grain marketing meetings are currently underway across the Midwest. Go to www.sfarmmarketing to register for a meeting near you.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 31st day of January 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global analytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. And Eric Snodgrass will be here to help us take a look at the weather forecast on this Friday edition of the closing market report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here are the settlement prices from the CME Group in Chicago for this Friday. March corn today, a penny and three quarters higher, finished at $3.81 and a quarter. May at $3.86 and a half, 1 and three quarters higher. July up a penny and a half at $3.91, and December at $3.90 and three quarters, a quarter of a cent higher. March soybeans down 3 and three quarters, settled $8.72 and a half. May down 3 and three quarters at $8.86 and three quarters, and July at $9.50, down 3 and three quarters. Next year's November down 3 and three quarters at $9.12 and a quarter cents. The bean oil future 69 cents lower at $29.94, and the bean meal 50 cents lower. It settled at $2.91. Wheat futures March contract down 6 3/4 of a cent at $5.53 3/4. July for the soft red at $5.52 1/2, down 4 1/2, and July hard red down 6 at $4.80. Live cattle futures in Chicago February 40 cents lower at $1.21.37 1/2. The April lives at $1.19.67 1/2, 52 1/2 lower. The feeder cattle finished up 42 1/2 in the lead March at $1.36 7 1/2, in April at $137.52 1/2 per 100 pounds, up 40 cents. Lean hogs February at $57.12 1/2, down $4.17 1/2, and the April there at $61.60, $4.22 1/2 higher. We're now joined by Mike Zuzulo. He's a global analytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. Thanks, Mike, for being with us. What happened in the soybeans?
Yeah, I mean, there's two different things going on, Todd. They're both related to consumption. They're both related to demand. The market in general and the commodity markets both are trying to price in and track this issue of the coronavirus, and knowing that it's a very opaque issue. But there's two things going on, I think. There's an issue of the supply chain and how clear it is that airlines are canceling flights in and out of China. China's extended their Lunar New Year. They've extended the shutdown of their key exchanges. And some of those include commodity exchanges, so that it's next to impossible for them to be able to hedge off any purchases of soybeans as far as locking in crush margins on the Dalian exchange or something like that. So that's a true issue that is ongoing, that I think the market is accurate in being fearful of. The worse this virus gets, the more that type of lost demand will probably be with us. And once that demand is lost, it's lost for good, unfortunately. Now, the other one I think is a little bit more difficult to get your hands around, and maybe a little bit more optimistic. This is the loss of demand due to consumption of individuals and producers not being able to get food to grocery stores. We're starting to hear now that there are actually food shortages in China. We're hearing of people hoarding food. They're stocking up, buying 3-4 weeks worth of food in the major cities. This is a scenario that may be short-term negative because they're not going out and buying and eating out. Starbucks has closed thousands of restaurants across the country. But at the same time, there is a need to replace that consumption and that hoarding. And I think this is where the commodities probably have the best look to them. I think when you look at both of these issues, both of these demand consumption issues, if the scientists are correct that the worst is going to be behind us by the end of next week or the first of the following week, I think then you have the really good likelihood of finding a pretty significant low in the commodity markets, because I quite frankly think we're already pricing in another bad week as we take these markets down here at the end of this week.
Yeah, so the Dalian has been closed in China and remains closed today. It won't open again until Monday, according to the notices on their website. So once that starts to trade there again, you think things will begin to bottom out and we could pick something up then?
I do, and I say that for a variety of reasons. The ADM CEO was interviewed after their earnings this week. He talked about improving U.S. corn exports. He talked about pretty much exactly what we just talked about. If this issue doesn't bleed over into the global economy and you see a lot of coronavirus in a lot of different countries that sits around and mutates for the next couple months, he doesn't see much of an impact negatively in the market. The JBS CEO was also interviewed, and he even suggested that they could pick up some extra meat business from Brazil heading into China as far as meat imports. And I think this makes a lot of sense from a standpoint that the Chinese government is going to do absolutely everything possible to keep their growth as elevated as possible as they go through this, and especially after they get through the worst of it. So the worst of it is the key at this point.
Yeah, so the wonder is, when will the worst come? And it's the reason, I suppose, they extended, it is the simple reason that they extended the lunar holiday out another week, said businesses need to be closed to shut everything down, trying to keep people from simply coming in contact with people and letting this virus run its course as quickly as possible in the population that already has it, as opposed to being exposed to others in China. And it's the reason you shut trade off to some extent, or in and out of the countries as well. Why Hong Kong has shut its doors to China, relatively speaking, at this point. So now we get past that. What are producers needing to do with what they've got in the bin? We're getting to that point where we're in February now. We'll be setting a price tag for new crop, and we'll be trying to move old crop corn and whatever's left of the beans as well.
Yeah, I would say basis contracts are going to be most on the minds of producers for corn and beans, especially after this rout that we've seen. The two things that I'm going to be looking at next week, both of them start with a D. The dollar, that is showing that by being down almost 0.5%, the day that the UK leaves the European Union is already starting to reflect, in my opinion, technically, Todd, that we have factored in a lot of negativity, and it's time to inflate this market again. So now we wait for the dollar to ignite the copper, the crude, and the wheat market. The beans and corn and meal should be right behind those and shouldn't have to take that long to do that. And I would add to that the hog market as well. The other thing I would say to you is, with the bean corn ratio being where it's at right now for new crop, as you accurately say, we're going into that base setting price. We've got the lowest premium in the Nove beans versus Dees corn on new crop since September of last year, and we're at 2.34. My studies would suggest you go below 2.32 in terms of a bean premium to the corn and the new crop, you're going to start garnering more corn acres. And I think that's really important as we go into the first half of the month. Probably the biggest issue that I'll be looking at, other than what we've just talked about, when it comes to the grain specifically, is the hard red wheat areas are looking drier. The crop continues to decline. There's less and less competition out there, and the 16-day outlook looks very dry as well. So I'd be looking for a lot out of the hard red wheat price next week, and certainly wouldn't want to see soft red wheat take out its lows from this week of 550 and three quarters. The last thing is a little bit on the outside, but I've been getting a lot of questions about locking in diesel needs for the spring. Heating oil right now, because of this coronavirus and some supply builds, is at its lowest price since, I believe it was September or August of 2017. We're at an almost three-year low right now. So be on the red alert to get some diesel needs locked in once we see a low in the crude oil market.
Any final thoughts before I let you go?
Well, I think one of the things that happened this week is the vaccine for African swine fever. That's not been priced in yet to the market, because that brings in a solid footing for feed demand going into 2020. Also, USDA saying their WASDE numbers will reflect the phase one trade deal. I'm hopeful that that means to the funds that their clock is ticking for wanting to be a short in the market, and that before the next report, they will not want to be as short as they are right now.
Yeah, not only will it reflect phase one, but it'll also reflect USMCA, because those are in place now. So
exactly.
We'll see how that goes. Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Todd. Have a great weekend.
Hey, you too. That's Mike Zuzlo. He's at globalanalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas, and will be one of 16 analysts on stage At our all-day Ag Outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana on Tuesday, March the 3rd. That's the first Tuesday of the month. You should be there as well. The cost is just $30. You get the 16 analysts along with a Beef House roll and coffee in the morning and a Beef House lunch. How can you beat that deal? Sign up today online at willag.org. Another one of the analysts, and all the details are there on the website, but another one of the analysts that will join us is Eric Snodgrass. He's from Nutrien Ag Solutions. And today he's going to talk about the weather forecast. He'll do that there at the Beef House as well. Hey, thanks, Eric, so much for being with us today. I hope you are having a really great Friday.
Yeah, I am. I'm in Florida right now, but only for a few more minutes. but it's been a nice balmy one down here.
Well, you have a good flight, and we'll be glad to have you back here in Champaign County tonight. Now, let's talk about the weather forecast just a bit, because when you get home, things are going to get warmer. And actually, frankly, it's been pretty mild so far this winter, all in all. Can you tell me about that pattern and if it will continue?
Yeah, you know, we're going to be in a warming trend even after some of the light snow that we had today across the area. And the warming trend is going to extend through the beginning of the week, so through Monday. But we do have a system we're watching after that. And the system that comes through on Tuesday, there is the snow potential on the backside of it. But what we really lacked for quite some time is some sustained cool air. We haven't had much of that. I mean, you have to go back to November before you find a time period where we were pretty much, well below average in terms of temperatures. And big question looms, is this going to be what the rest of winter looks like? Well, if you want the polar vortex to help, it's not. It's on the other side of the planet, and it's going to stay over in Siberia, and therefore we've disconnected one piece. The tropics right now aren't any help, so the MJO isn't going into a phase that favors colder weather. And the jet stream's just cranked right now, and the faster it moves, the more west to east the air flows in the upper levels of the atmosphere, and that prevents, big troughs from sweeping in. But it doesn't calm down our pattern in terms of precipitation. So while we have a little bit today and we're going to go into a relatively drier weekend, we're watching a system next week that could come through. And if I even just stretch that out even to week two, seems that the southeast, the mid-south, parts of the Ohio River Valley, they're going to continue to stay wet as well. So the pattern's moving, but it's just not unlocking any sort of cold. And by the way, some news today about the Great Lakes. Last year at this time, Lake Erie, over 90% frozen. This year, less than 1%. So we've got to keep a close eye on those lakes as well as we go to spring.
Oh, that's amazing. Speaking of spring, every day that passes, we gather up more data, or you do, and the weather folks too, I suppose. Has our thinking, or your thinking about what spring will look like, changed over the last month at all?
Well, it has a little bit, but I'm going to be excited to get some new model data in at the beginning of February. And my thinking right now is two-part. First, if we have persistence as our dominant forecasting feature, in other words, if what's going on now continues to February and the beginning of March, that would point toward, more active weather patterns and therefore the potential for having another wet start to spring. Don't forget, we've already got really saturated soils, so anything above average would give us problems. But kind of the second part of this is I've been paying close attention to what's happening in the Central Pacific. We're getting some ideas here that maybe we could get some upwelling near South America, stretching towards south of Hawaii. If we bring in some cooler water into that area, this might give us a bit more of a mild spring and maybe even lend us over to a little bit more heat this summer. Now, understand, I'm just putting together some historical correlations. This isn't a slam dunk. It's just something I think everyone needs to watch. So while our models have trended wet for spring for the past 3 months, we're going to watch how they update here beginning of February, and then keep in mind those ocean temperatures in the Pacific as they could play a role as well.
What do you see for South America?
Well, parts of Argentina got, those million or billion dollar rains recently. So they're, working toward the end of what's been planted as their first crop, which again, they plant over a long window here. So the rains that have come through and are forecast to continue is going to look good for there. Going up to Mato Grosso, where they're trying to harvest a crop right now, the first crop soybeans, to get that second crop of corn and cotton in. They are looking at a drier week compared to average, but remember, to be a little bit drier than normal as we go into this time period in February still means they get about 1.5 to 2.5 inches of rainfall a week. So anything drier than normal will help them harvest the first crop of soybeans. And as we look out into February, it looks as though Brazil's eastern regions show up wet. But right now, they've been trending wetter for Argentina, which would be beneficial, and not too much of a headache, I don't think, for Mato Grosso. But we got to keep a close eye on that as they put that Safrinha crop in.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions, joined us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media, and will be one of the analysts that joins us for our All Day Ag Outlook over at the Beef House. You can get your tickets for that March 3rd event right now. They're just $30 at willag.org. Now, yesterday afternoon, we recorded Commodity Week. It's a great program. You can hear the whole of the program online today at willag.org as well. Our panelists for the day included Ellen Dearden of Ag Review out of Morton, Illinois, Merrill Crowley from Midwest Market Solutions in Watseka, Illinois, Brian Stark of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County, and from Citizens Grain in Charlotte, Michigan, Angie Setzer. I started by asking Angie to remind us what she does for a living. You probably also recognize her from Twitter.
Yeah, we are located in Charlotte, Michigan, which is just south and a little west of Lansing. South central Michigan is what I say. I grew up in, and I guess everyone fights over what central Michigan is, but we're right in the middle of the mitten, I guess you could say, to the south of it. And here I manage 5 elevator locations, including 1 state-of-the-art food-grade non-GMO soybean facility where we do exporting the bulk of that overseas. And then we also manage a very large direct ship program. So basically, I buy from the farmer, sell direct to the end user, kind of make some markets on the cash side in that respect. And you know, work with farmers all over the state and throughout the Corn Belt to kind of help them improve their marketing and make better decisions and when it comes to how they generate that revenue on their farm.
And it's probably important. Most people may recognize your name if they're Twitter followers, although they'll probably recognize your handle, which is at Goddess of Grain. Very nice handle, by the way. quite memorable, I have to admit. So tell me about Michigan and what conditions you've been working under since fall harvest there.
Oh, yeah, is duress a condition that we've been working under? You know, it's really been one of those things where 2019 was not friendly to anyone, and it felt like it was a extra, you know, not friendly to us right here. And in our specific trade zone right here in Eaton County, in particular, where we are, you know, our overall production was down, you know, nearly cut in half from a year ago, simply because of the prevented plantings and things of that nature. You know, several thousand acres in our area didn't get put in, and that what did get put in went in late. You know, we had corn that actually went in June 28th of last year and made grain. It got delivered into the elevator at about 32% moisture this past fall. So we dealt with less than ideal conditions. I thought 2018 was one of the worst soybean harvests that we would ever see. And 2019 definitely topped that, you know, minimum moisture levels, you know, on the downside for someone that was coming direct out of the field. You know, if they were 15%, they were lucky. Most of them came off 18 to 22 or higher, you know, until things kind of froze up. The best bean harvest weather actually came the week of Christmas, which I hope I never, ever say that ever again. Corn quality was horrible. You know, most of it went in late. A lot of it was light. The heat units just absolutely shut off the very middle part of September. And so, you know, we got a long finish before frost, but we didn't get much heat to go along with it. So we didn't get the early frost that we were worried about, but we also didn't get any sort of additional help in kind of finishing the crop. So most of it came off 30-35%. You know, it breaks when you look at it sort of deal. Low test weight around 51 pounds or so has kind of been the norm. It's not the absolute every single person out there has that, but it is, you know, pretty widespread across the state, you know, the poor crop conditions. And so as a result, we are seeing several of the elevators or end users that we work with actually discovering that they're having a hard time keeping their corn in good condition. And, you know, that's starting to cause a little bit of a weird sort of setup in the cash grain pipeline, you know, structure for us here with some of these end users that, you know, would traditionally be taking in and grinding a certain amount of corn, just trying to grind their way out of a problem. or dumping it into a different end user just simply because they need to get it off site and moved through. So it's caused some unique issues. Farmers are hearing about that and a little bit more willing to part with their grain as a result because of that fear of the unknown when it comes to quality. So we've seen, you know, steady corn movement because of that. And then we also have a behemoth of a crush plant coming on about 50 miles to our north. It's going to be crushing about 40 million bushels of soybeans a year once it's running. And so that's thrown a whole new fun unknown into the mix as well, with basis levels firming, you know, 30, 40 cents from normal values, just with the idea of that coming on and really trying to suck up what was a much smaller crop than normal, in the area.
Ellen Dearden from AgriView, do you have a question for Angie?
I sure do. Angie, what is the feeling in your area with this new NAFTA supposedly going to be signed by Canada really pretty shortly? I figured that some of your grain has to move north.
Yeah, a lot of our grain, you can see it. We kind of have a back and forth to the east there, Blue Water Bridge, or through Windsor on the Detroit side of things. It's been a unique year again, I mean, in that respect, too, simply because of Canada with the TPP. So a lot of people forgot that that was even a thing, right? But they signed the TPP, and that kind of created this whole new export market structure that wasn't there for, you know, a lot of Ontario wheat producers in the past. So we've seen a lot of wheat being exported. We did see a smaller than anticipated corn crop there as well. So that has created a new feed wheat market in Ontario. For us on the Canadian trade, typically our corn goes east and their wheat comes west. So we kind of flop back and forth, but this year it's really kind of limited the corn going east because the market structure has been so strong. You know, it's really trying to actually make it move west this year, which is quite unexpected. Our west side feeders are definitely, you know, a couple of them are still posted 50, 60 over, you know, over in the Holland area there. So that's keeping the corn, you know, in the mitten, I guess you could say. But having the new NAFTA signed is always a good thing, or having NAFTA or whatever, having free trade in place has always been somewhat of an ease of business. We tend to kind of go back and forth quite a bit. And, you know, with Ontario, it's almost like another state for us. In fact, I would say that trade is almost more unencumbered when it comes to going into Ontario or buying grain from Ontario than it is even going south, except for maybe into like the Toledo area or something like that. We just traditionally have a pretty good back and forth, and that'll maintain. It's good to know that that'll be maintained and that there isn't a concern there, but it'll definitely be interesting to watch, you know, how Canada continues to benefit to a certain extent from the signing of that TPP.
I don't know whether you'll know the answer to this, because the 11 nations of the TPP do not include anybody going to the east or across the Atlantic, really. Where is the wheat being shipped to?
Yeah. Typically, it ends up going, it's through their Hamilton market, is what they say. And honestly, I imagine it ends up going towards the Vancouver port, if I had to.
Oh, it goes the other way. Okay.
It goes east. It goes, you know, ends up going west a very long way. But yeah, it ends up moving that direction eventually.
That's Angie Setzer with Citizens Grain in Charlotte, Michigan.